This is Tech Plus, and a big hello to you and welcome to it, where we discuss the week's biggest tech stories. It's Eon with you, and then also, as always, Kane. How's it going, Kane? How was your week?
I'm doing well. What a good week.
Was a good week, much cooler at the end of the week, thank goodness.
Yeah, we got blessed on Friday with like a nice little breather.
Lots of rain and almost like a little teaser of winter. I can't wait, actually.
I was speaking to my friends in America, actually they're in South America at the moment, and I said, you know, well, what's a temperature do you like? They're like, oh no, between like 16 and 20 is like good weather for us. And I'm like, wow, if it's 16 here, you're cold, you know.
Yeah.
We used to different kind of temperatures, and it reminds me, like the other day I went to town. You know how long it's been since I was walking around in town barefoot, and it's just so hot that sure. You've got to choose carefully where you walk on the ground, otherwise, you know, you have to shadow hunt.
Yeah, shadow hunt. I remember doing that as a kid.
You got to like find a balance between hustling to get where you need to go, but also not running too fast as to, you know, put more pressure.
The paving and especially the tar roads, it gets very, very hot.
I remember in school, some days it got so hot that you would walk over some tar and it'd be wet.
What?
Did you ever have that? We have like melted tar on the
road. No,
you've never had that.
Where was that, Kane?
What, really?
No, it sounds like global warming.
You've never walked over a piece of road or something and it's soft.
No.
Really?
No. Why was that?
I don't know.
Did it melt?
It got hot. Yeah. So maybe the mixture wasn't.
Was that in the Karoo or somewhere?
No, I mean in George. I mean, not too crazy.
Jesus. So we had global warming back then already. You know, so it's been happening.
So let me ask you, do you use Bolt? Have you ever used Bolt?
No. I once, out of desperation, wanted to use it because Uber was too busy. But no, I don't think they were operating in the area, or they were also busy, I think. Have you used Bolt?
I feel like I've looked for them in Asda before, but I don't think I've ever gotten a Bolt trip in the Eden area.
But also, the reputation is not as good as Uber's.
No, but here's something that might blow your mind a little bit. Albeit sometimes, I think we can all agree that it feels like, you know, Bolt is the no-name brand of, you know, of Ubering. But to be surprised, Bolt actually smashes Uber in Gauteng for the price comparison, if you were to compare the two. So apparently My Broadband compared the price of hailing a ride from both platforms on three routes in Gauteng across various times of day. For the comparison, they selected routes from Four Ways, Johannesburg to Sandton City, Lanzira International Airport, and Sunbet Arena in Pretoria. They gathered pricing between Monday and Wednesday, 2024, and at morning, midday, and evening. And then they went on to find out that Bolt was actually significantly cheaper. In fact, that Bolt's average monthly pricing worked out to 108 Rand for the Four Ways to Sandton City route compared to 118 for the same route through Uber. Now, if you take that route every day, it's 100 Rand every 10 days. You know, just there, just on one way. Now, you take that route twice, it's 200 Rand every 10 days. That's not too bad. I mean, that's quite a big difference. If you could say, if you had an extra 200 Rand every 10 days from just doing your normal Uber shuttling, it's not that bad, eh?
But maybe it's cheaper, but I mean, that it doesn't mean necessarily that it's any safer.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean that. But apparently, even in the evenings, Uber can be more expensive. So it looks like Bolt.
Have you seen in December when demand is up? And they double those prices, eh?
Really?
I once saw it was really busy. I think it was December or holiday time. It was like 75 Rand a pop.
Really?
And it kept climbing. And then there was a little badge that said high demand. And then the price, 75 Rand instead of like 30 Rand.
So here's something maybe that's interesting. If you take a trip in the morning, but this is obviously in Gauteng and it's for Bolt and Uber. If you take a trip in the morning, you're looking at about 115 Rand on Bolt for the same distance and 143 Rand on Uber. Mm. So, I mean, that's quite expensive, meaning in the mornings is the most expensive and you can save the most money with you know, an Uber alternative. Whereas midday, you're going to save the least amount of money. It looks like about 4 Rand for the same duration, same distance. And then at the evening, you can save 10 Rand. For that same distance. So Bolt definitely working out cheaper And I think that's their only advantage. I mean, who would use Bolt if it was more expensive? That's my question. Do you know, do we think it would still be successful? I don't know what would happen. If Bolt came to Nasna, I don't know what would happen. Because it feels like we don't have enough drivers and riders.
Yeah.
Every minute of the day. You know, some days we have more people looking for a Lyft than we do Ubers. And other days we have more Ubers than people looking for a Lyft. So I feel like if you introduce a second e-hailing service, I don't know how it's going to go. Probably be way too undersaturated. That's what I would think. But we have other good news as well, especially for crypto in South Africa. Okay. So Bitcoin has officially hit 1 million rand.
Sure.
Yeah. 1 million rand. And we will talk about that in a minute. I mean, it's not the first time it's ever hit 1 million rand. It actually hit 1 million previously before. But apparently, here's some feedback from Luno's country manager for South Africa. Anyone who doesn't know, Luno is the biggest exchange in South Africa for crypto. And probably one of the most predominant advertisers as well. So if you've seen any ads for Luno or things like that, you're very likely a South African. So they went on to tell my broadband in an interview that the country's regulators have moved far quicker than their peers. David, who is the country's manager, Luno's country manager for South Africa, went on to say that he thinks there was initially a lot of confusion and a lot of people did not understand what cryptocurrencies and what Bitcoin was. However, research from the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, or FSCA, revealed that, and wait for this, over 5.8 million South Africans own crypto assets, with Bitcoin being the most popular. 5.8 million. I'll tell you why that's a lot. Because in the greater scheme of things, right? In the greater scheme of things, what is our population? 60 million? Right? 60 million? 9% of the population? In the world, the average is, I think, 2% of the world has crypto. But in South Africa, 9% of South Africa owns crypto, which is really impressive considering we're a third world country. Not every single person in South Africa is banked. Not every single person in South Africa has a smartphone.
Yeah.
Not every single person in South Africa not only has those things, but knows how to use them enough to get crypto. And out of all those people, 10% almost, least if you don't consider the super old and the super young, 10% at least of those individuals own a crypto asset. That's five times more than the global average. That tells you that South Africa is a first mover. This is one of the first, you know, countries in the world probably to have such a significant amount of their population using something like cryptocurrency, a global currency. Not only that, but you look at something like El Salvador, who made Bitcoin their official currency. I mean, that was a massive move back then. And you would wonder, well, how much of their population uses it all the time? And my other question is, I would love to know what the majority of South Africans use cryptocurrency for. Wonder if they're investing or if they're earning foreign income and they're getting paid in that. I wonder if they're traders, day traders. I wonder if they're just local business people in South Africa who accept money in crypto. I wonder if they don't really know what crypto is, but their customers are wanting to shop in it. So by offering it, and they're just accumulating it.
Yeah.
I'd love to know, like, you know.
No, those are good questions.
What is this 10%? And you know, how can we use that to keep pioneering, you know, the adoption of something like that? Very, very cool, I think. You know, it's South Africa showing face. In the global ring. And then, you know, in terms of Bitcoin hitting 1 million rand, something very interesting is on November 8, 2021, Bitcoin hit similar levels. But right now, Bitcoin's trading at about $52,500, or just over 1 million rand. And on November 8, 2021, it was actually trading at $66,000. Per Bitcoin back then, right? And it even hit an all-time high of $69,000. The crazy thing is, back then, right, Bitcoin was worth over 1 million rand, but it was worth $66,000, right? Now, Bitcoin in South Africa is worth 1 million rand, but it's only worth $52,500. So that shows you, in the last 2 years, the depreciation of the rand on a global scale.
Sure, yeah.
$66,000, you know, If you took R1 million and you converted it into dollars in 2021, November 8th, 2021, around that time, you would have got $66,000 for that R1 million worth of Bitcoin, technically. And now, today, that would be R52,500.
Sure.
Imagine, just imagine for a second that you've held onto R1 million for 2 years and it was once worth $66,000 and is now worth $52,500. That's a difference of about $13,500. Imagine you lost $13,500 over 2 years because your currency got weaker.
I would just cry.
It's like 250,000. That's like 200,000 rand. It's a lot of money. You know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, sure.
It's a pity, and it does show. But it also says that, well, what happens if, you know, if you had held on to that Bitcoin, you know, if you had held on to that Bitcoin 2 years ago, you would have been very sorry because you're only seeing that kind of price returning now. So, you know.
But you had Bitcoin, eh?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was stolen.
No, funny. And well, that wasn't really Bitcoin. That was a while ago. I was staying at an Airbnb in Plett and I had some crypto in one of my wallets. It was like $2,000 or something like that.
You know? No, man. That's
a lot of money back then, yeah. And then when they robbed us, they had... you know, they took all the laptops and the phones, but they didn't know it was on there. So sure. It's still on there to this day.
But you can't get it back. There's no way you can get back in.
No, they like took the computers, the...
That's so frustrating.
Everything. Yeah, they took everything. But hey, you live and you learn, eh? I mean, how else are you going to learn? Sometimes some lessons are cheap and some lessons are not.
Yeah.
You just can't get upset about the ones that aren't.
Exactly.
Things that people shouldn't be upset about. Google. Google's huge. If you said, what's the biggest company in the world, what would you say?
Yeah, probably Google, eh?
Google.
Google's everywhere.
What do you think one of the up-and-coming big companies are in the world?
Tesla, maybe?
Okay. For electric cars.
Yeah.
I would say that's probably accurate. What else?
One of the social networks, definitely.
Yeah.
Facebook, Meta. Yeah.
Meta's big. Apple, probably also pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Microsoft.
Yeah.
I think your biggest findings is probably going to be tech companies. Especially this time of year. Or this time of 2020, you know, 2020 onwards.
Yes.
So these companies, you wouldn't believe it, who's made their way to number 4 most valuable company, passing Google, NVIDIA.
The graphics card
manufacturer.
Okay.
And why? Because NVIDIA is the number 1 producer of graphics cards that are used for AI processing.
Ah, and that's gone up a lot. So that makes sense.
Not a little, a lot. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And that's skyrocketed. And they, I mean, you hear about Adobe's doing it. You mentioned Adobe. You mentioned Meta. We mentioned Apple. What are they all using? They're all trying to get into AI. NVIDIA is the only one producing it. So my theory is... Is it really unreasonable to believe that NVIDIA could surpass Apple, Microsoft, you know? Could they? I think definitely. I think they definitely could. I think it's very, very likely. I think AI is a massive industry. We've seen the influence that it's had in a single year, a year of progress.
And it's going to get even bigger.
But here's the crazy thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens when we consider, well, Microsoft, for example? Do we think NVIDIA could become worth more than something like Microsoft?
Mm-hmm.
Because Microsoft is a massive investor in AI. Like a massive investor. I think they have 10 billion in OpenAI right now.
Sure.
10 really? Billion. I think they started with 1 billion and then they bought another 10 billion. And I think they own 75% of OpenAI until they've made some of that money back or something like that. That's kind of what I believe that's similar deal parameters. And... for me, that's just crazy. Saudi Arabian Oil is number 3. Alphabet used to be number 4, meaning, which is Google, meaning NVIDIA just knocked Google out, meaning NVIDIA is bigger than Amazon, meaning NVIDIA is bigger than Meta.
Whoa.
Right? NVIDIA is bigger than Berkshire Hathaway. NVIDIA is bigger than Eli Lilly. I've never even heard of Eli Lilly.
Who the heck is
Don't mess with them. They're worth $612 billion. Founded by a chemist and Union Army veteran. What do they do? Whoa, who is this company? Listen here. This is crazy. Eli Lilly, E-L-I-L-I-L-L-Y, has a market cap of $612 billion, revenue of 32 billion, gross profit of 25 billion, right? 5-year annualized return, 39%. And it's founded by a chemist and Union Army veteran of the same name.
What? What do they manufacture?
So
what
have we got here? And army veteran with the same name got together and made the biggest company in the world. Like, how do you do
that? But what do they make?
Founded in 1876.
Can you see? Is it like a pharmaceutical company or something?
One of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies.
So I was right. Okay, but the chemist thing sort of gave us a clue there.
And its main revenue drivers are diabetes drugs.
You see?
And was the first company to mass produce insulin and the polio vaccine.
No wonder. Okay.
They also manufacture antidepressants.
It all makes sense.
Like Prozac.
Those are huge, huge brands, and they've got lots of sales.
And weight loss drugs.
Yeah, you see.
And that's number 9. So how big is NVIDIA?
Yeah, yo, that's hectic.
This is the only pharmacy other than, what is Berkshire Hathaway? Textile company is what it started out as. And was invested in by Warren Buffett. Oh, that's so interesting, hey?
Mm.
Their main business is obviously insurance. Most people will know that. But very, very crazy that, I mean, these are big companies, all tiny in size. There's no Tesla here.
No.
No Tesla.
I'm very surprised, eh?
Should we see if we can find
Almost
Tesla
can't believe
in this
it.
List? Number 10.
Oh, okay. So at least they made the list, the top 10. Yeah, okay.
And that's, I mean, NVIDIA is bigger than car manufacturers. NVIDIA is bigger than pharmaceutical companies, bigger than insurance companies, better than social media companies, better than Amazon, better than Google in terms of value. I sound crazy, but that is wild.
Cray cray.
That is cray cray. On that note, is it a music break?
It's time for some music notes on that note. And then we come back and we're going to talk about streaming services. You've got news on Showmax.
Yes.
And then I've got news on Prime.
Oh, let's do it.
They did something quite drastically this week. Stay tuned. This is Tech Plus and Jan Kane with you. And now we move on to our wonderful streaming services. Before Kane talks about Showmax, this week Amazon Prime did something quite big here in South Africa. It was very surprising. People didn't see this coming. Besides retrenching its South African staff and cutting all local South African productions and development. Amazon Studios and Prime Video are also ending its contract with its South African PR agency that will no longer do any work for Amazon Prime Video South Africa content. So this is very strange. It's almost like they're cutting ties with South Africa.
Wow.
I wonder what possibly led to them deciding this, you know?
Jeez. Well, you know, there is one little thing, possibly, maybe.
They're giving up on us.
Well, one, I think South Africa does have a history of, you know, retaliating against megacorp integration. You know, we saw it with Starlink, with South Africa, refusing to allow them to operate here. We even saw it with Amazon. We had, I think it was the Khoisan, like, kind of union strike with the original Amazon warehouse. But most importantly, we saw South Africa take Israel to international court.
Yeah.
And I think USA is allies with Israel, if I'm not mistaken. So there could also be that. And that's very surprising, eh? I mean,
yeah, they're giving up on us, yeah.
You know who's taking a sigh of relief right now?
Who?
Takealot.
Oh, how so?
Well, Takealot would have had to compete with Amazon, and hearing about how Amazon has started to kind of wobble on the idea of South Africa is going to make Takealot quite happy.
Only on the TV streaming.
No, front. I know they're not going to sit down that easy.
Yeah.
What if they repurpose? What if they're like, okay, let's let them have their movie. Let them watch their
TV. But wait a minute.
We'll sell them the TVs.
Yeah,
they've the long play.
Yeah, no, I definitely wouldn't get my hopes up there. I think they are coming with a vengeance when they bringing Amazon, the actual Amazon, to South Africa. But what's the latest on the Showmax front? Because last week we mentioned all the problems that people are having migrating to the new platform of Showmax.
Yeah, we spoke about that last week. People were trying to migrate. They were having playback issues. They were having login issues.
And you know what the big issue is?
What?
The biggest issue for people moving from Showmax. Not only did some TVs stop working and they no longer support those, so you can't have Showmax on it anymore, which means you'll have to cancel your subscription. Otherwise, just watch it on your laptop or your phone. But the other thing is, people who migrated said their watch lists and recommendations all disappeared. It reset when they moved. So that means you got to start all over again, and you can't remember where you were with your TV shows. Because, you know, it's nice. It remembers the last episode you watched.
So there's even the watch history.
Everything.
No.
So it remembers what you watched and everything, you know. So because this is a completely different app and completely different platform. So there was no way for them to migrate
That
as well. They could only, you know, just probably migrate the username and the password, and that's about it. You had to start all over again.
That's horrible.
And I mean, imagine going to your Netflix or your Prime or whatever, and you log in, or your Disney Plus, and all your history is gone there.
No,
so you can't remember.
Horrible.
Would you be able to find the last show you watched, like the last episode, exactly where you watched it? Do you look at the episode numbers? Would you be able to find your way back?
On based on my Netflix viewing history, no, I will have no. Number one, I will have
You'll
no idea
so
what episode. I don't even know what season I'm on.
Exactly.
Like season, like shows just end. It's not. I don't know. It's the finale. I'm like, what do you mean? First of all, that would be completely wrecked. And then second of all, how would I? You know, how would I? That, you know what a saving grace it is coming and putting a show on.
Mm-hmm.
And it like starts playing again. It's literally the whole reason I didn't watch Suits anymore. Because I lost my way.
Oh, really? Yeah,
and
yeah.
When you're like the fourth, fifth season in, to go through 24 episodes of different seasons to be like, I wonder where I really was.
No.
You won't.
And the descriptions also don't help. And I mean, the other thing is we rate stuff and we like stuff on there. And then it gets to know us. The algorithm knows what we like to watch. Now that thing is brand new. It doesn't know what you like to watch anymore. That's not very good.
You can start getting random recommendations, and you're going to have to just start from scratch, and it can be incredibly frustrating.
What's the news there that you've got on Showmax?
So putting the show in Showmax, MultiChoice has successfully, I love that they're like, we successfully migrated. No, dude. You
not
didn't.
Really.
It wasn't smooth. There's not. You can't put successful there. You know, you know, we sort of fully migrated nearly all their customers from the original Showmax platform to the new and improved streaming service by the same name running on technology from NBC Universal's Peacock. Nearly a decade after its launch, the first Showmax app was shut down on the 8th of February 2024. However, numerous Showmax users were still frustrated with MultiChoice's transition process in the new app and are still facing issues with some people unable to connect to TVs, or at least connect their TVs to the Showmax app, which is still a massive blow as well. I mean, let's be honest, if you had a Showmax account and now watching Showmax means you have to plug your computer into your TV, and would you still watch
too much effort unless there's a really brilliant show on there?
I would do it a couple times, but I don't think it would be a nightly occurrence. I used to do that, and it just becomes, once you have your smart TV, you can't go back. Like once you have your smart TV box, that thing is really the best friend that you can have.
It is.
And to it now is, not know where your shows are and everything, I don't know, hey? I mean, what else would you do? I mean, maybe it was a deal-related thing. Maybe they were having trouble with their agency. I just hope it wasn't like this whole, like, we're just not really going to care, you know, about people's watch history. Or at least warn people. Be like, hey, everybody, go check your watch history. Go check your wish list. Just note down some of your shows there so that when the new Showmax launches, you can go and add all the same stuff again.
Or maybe it was hush-hush, eh? Because they didn't want to demotivate people.
I don't think this is a case where you should ask for forgiveness, not permission. I think this is the exception to that cause. Don't mess with my night.
They were probably like, oops, we forgot to mention that.
Oh, by the way.
Did we mention that? Oops.
Maybe they did a casual, like, remember when we said you might not have your, you know, might not have your watch history anymore? Yeah. So here we've spoken about NVIDIA, got to the top of the logs, number of four biggest company overtaking Apple and Meta and, you know, a whole bunch of new companies that we didn't even know existed a few seconds ago. And now we're taking a look at OpenAI. So it's been neck and neck these days for various AI models. We've had OpenAI's first big integration was with DALL-E, where it was able to bring large language model processing to image generation. And what that really means is large language models are essentially like, you know, that's the cognitive chatbot that you know, that you would know and recognize. You know, it's the thing that you can talk to that remembers your name and can have a conversation with you, and you can, you know, you can ask it to write you a blog and then explain why the blog doesn't sound so good, and it will take that information and make it better for you. You know, that's cognition. That's like large language model stuff. And DALL-E is image processing. It's like take 1,000 people, ask them to describe an image, and then show AI the image and the description so that when someone comes and gives a description of an image, it has an idea of what image to paint. So they merged those two together to create what is now OpenAI's ability to use cognition and large language models to produce image generative, you know, to be able to make images and do all that sort of stuff that's becoming so popular. Well, you know, when that's happening, Midjourney's coming out with new stuff. They're an AI platform as well. Leonardo's also trying to do new stuff. Firefly's launched their Adobe Firefly suite, trying to do new stuff in painting, generative AI. So you've got all these companies with their AI models. Google coming out with Gemini 1.5 now as well, which is also a large language model, image processor and video processor. Meta coming out with theirs. Samsung talking about their new flagship phones being integrated with their own large language model trained in to help you do translation and stuff like that. It's getting huge. The competition is massive.
Yeah, sure.
But today, OpenAI just made history. Right? We were expecting like another large language model update, maybe a bit more cognition, maybe a couple more languages, maybe we'd see a little bit better like post image editing, maybe we'd see some InDesign tools, like some ways to paint on images and change things. What we got, we were not expecting. What we got was something called Sora. S-O-R-A. It isn't available for everyone to use yet. Only a select few people have access to it. But what we're talking about here is text-to-video AI models. And nothing like you're prepared for. I'm going to show you a picture of what one of those videos look like. And the first thing you will notice is that it's indistinguishable. It is completely and utterly indistinguishable. What you're looking at right now, you can even grab the phone there and look at it up close. What you're looking at right now is an AI video completely AI generated, from the background to the foreground to every, that person, that scene doesn't exist in real life. That was made in 35 seconds through video generation.
Kane, what's so hectic is the road is wet. It's obviously been raining. This person, it looks like a woman, is walking through the water and walking on the tar, and her shadow and everything is there. Yes. And the people in the background and also the lights in the background, they also have shadows in the water. Like you would see that reflection after it rained at night. Wow. Very, very convincing. It looks like it was shot on site.
It literally looks like it was shot on site. It would take you a good minute to produce that shot.
There's no way I could say that's AI.
It's like it's like someone took a video of at night of the middle of New York with all of the lights on, you know, all of the city street advertising, and that the floor was actually damp and reflecting the light of all of these buildings in the sky, while at the same time contrasting with the actual light of the buildings in the sky. And the it's absolutely,
and that was in seconds. There's no way you can tell that's AI, and this is getting a bit scary.
And here's another one. Here's another one with like a drone-like shot going through a snowy place. It literally looks like someone is flying a drone through a city that's been covered in a blanket of snow, and it literally looks like it's been shot from an 8K video with the best team of cinematographers. And it is the most unbelievable.
It's going to get so easy to make movies.
It is going to be indistinguishable to see what has been made in a movie. I saw another one where there were these two puppies, like right up close on each other. They had snow on their face. You know, they were, you know, playing around in the snow all through AI. It was absolutely insane. And they just casually dropped that. Like, hey, here's some video stuff we've been working on. And everyone is like, what?
I saw some very dreamy images videos on TikTok recently. And it just looked so perfect. It looked like heaven when you die. Everything is all shiny and beautiful. There's this dog walking and he's looking back. It's almost like he's waiting for you. It's this page. I think it's ASMR or something. Or just relaxing visuals to calm you down. There's nice music playing. And you look up at the sky. And the stars are like twinkling and everything. And it looks so surreal. And I knew it wasn't real, obviously. This was probably... This is how they made it.
Exactly.
Because it gives me that vibe. It's almost like it's magical.
They did something that... That's people have been trying really, really... really hard to crack. It's video, it's text to video, and text to 3D. Vivid. That is mainly what's coming next. So that's what we saw.
That's
there.
Amazing, eh? It's gonna be we can all make movies now.
Yeah, we can
shoot everywhere, anywhere, anytime.
It's just the sheer amount of time it would take to do something like that.
Yeah, for longer scenes, I'm sure it's gonna be a problem. And how would you make the dialogue and all that stuff? But just for you know, like in between scenes. Like people walking across the road or so.
Yes.
You don't have to get... That will help the movie makers because they won't have to go and get those permits anymore to shoot in a place when they can just do it like this, right?
That's very true. That is very, very
It's going to save them a lot of money as well. Then they can pay the lead actors more. And no cameramen or anything needed on site then.
But what happens to the cameraman and the money they would have made? And what happens to
the actors? But we'll use them for the actual scenes. They just don't have to do. They just don't have to do all the outdoor shots. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of ways you can look at it.
There is a lot of ways that you can look at it. I think the most, you know, also another thing is how much electricity do we think AI consumes?
Oh my gosh!
You know, it was like one of those things. Like everybody loved crypto until we started realizing how much electricity it consumes.
Oh, you never think of it like that because you don't see it plugged in front of you, so you don't really worry about it.
No, and it's not easy to calculate something like the watts and joules that go into a single AI image generative prompt. But we're not completely in the dark about how about the true cost of AI. And I was reading some articles about it, and it's actually very, very interesting. You know. It's very, very difficult to rent, and we won't go into all the specifics about it, but in a nutshell, it uses quite a lot of electricity. It uses quite a lot of electricity for a bunch of people asking images to prompt, but arguably it requires quite a lot of oxygen to keep people alive to produce the same volume of images. So, you know, it's all relative, But these GPU miners and things like that that they're running in order to crunch this math and stuff are not small little devices, you know.
Yeah, massive. And the processing power must be insane.
Insane. Like, yeah. Insane.
Insane.
So another thing that's happening now is apparently a lot of Apple fans are returning their Vision Pros.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why?
So apparently all Apple products come with a 1 month return policy or something like that, and now we're reaching that 1 month. So the first wave of Apple adopters now would be in a position where they have to, if they're going to return the product, it's going to be now, you know. So it's really, that's why we're also seeing a lot of it. But beyond just that, apparently comfort, headaches and eye strain are among the top reasons people say they're returning their Vision Pro headsets. So for some Apple Vision Pro buyers, the honeymoon is already over. It's no coincidence that there's been an uptick on social media for the Vision Pro, but there seem to be a number of people who are returning these $3,500 headsets. I'm gonna be honest. If I spend 70,000 rand on a pair of, you know, swimming goggles that have LEDs in them and they do a couple things and I'm not really feeling the vibe, they're getting returned.
Maybe they can't really afford it and they just got a loan to have it, and then they just played with it for a month and then decided to, you know, they were planning to return it all along to get their money back as well.
It's just like one of those things where you could sell your car for like 200,000 rand and then you buy another car for 160,000 rand and the rest of the money you put to Apple Vision Pro. Then your car breaks down. You could take the Apple Vision Pro and buy another car.
Yeah,
that's got to be some record in terms of tech that is not that. It's very cool tech. It's very cool tech, but it's tech that the Quest 3 can do right now. Not, you know, we're not talking like the maddest of differences, but it is something that the Quest 3 can do. The only difference is the Quest 3 costs 1/7, 1/8 of the price.
Mm.
You know, 1/6 to 1/7, 1/8 of the price. So apparently it's a 14-day period where you have to return, and we can see it see that happening now. Apparently comfort is one of the most cited reasons for returns. People have said the headset gives them headaches and triggers motion sickness, which is not uncommon. We've heard a lot about the same stuff
with
the other VR headsets. I mean, one of the funniest things I tell everybody is, like, one of the funniest things my friend has ever said to me, who plays a lot of VR, is I say, how's the VR, you know, like 3 months in? He's like, great, you know, after month 2.5 I stopped throwing up. And I was like, that's fantastic.
Somebody said if you get it at first, for the first month or so, have a bucket close by. I was wondering why they said that.
You can put yourself in a bit of a spin-off.
It can make you sick because it looks so real as well, and your brain has to get used to it.
You know what it is? It's actually so dizzy. It's not going into the world that's bad. It's actually when the illusion being in this new world breaks. And I'll give you an example. Let's say you set up a 1x1, or let's say a 2x2 space in your room. 2x2 is quite big, right? So if you set up a 2x2 space in your room and you put this headset on, you can't see your room anymore. You just have this 2x2 meter zone that you can walk. If you get to the edge of your playable area, you'll see a lines come up in the screen. You'll know that you're at the end of your playable area. But when you're in your virtual environment, you're in a virtual environment. You might be in a room that's 6 meters big. So what happens when you want to get from one side of the room to the other side of the room, and the room in the virtual reality is 5 meters and the room in your physical reality is 2 meters, you walk to the end of that border, and now you can't go straight anymore. Because if you go straight anymore, you're going to go through your window. So
yeah.
What you have to do then you have to walk the other 3 meters with the controller. So now in your mind, you've walked 2 meters forward, stopped, stood still, and walked another 3 meters forward without actually walking those 3 meters forward. And in a nutshell, that just confuses one's brain.
No wonder you throw up. Jeez.
Not an easy thing to compute.
Yeah, it's like your brain can't keep up with it. I think I would probably faint.
It's not even get into skydiving or racing drones around or... You know,
I don't think we were made for that stuff.
I would, I would struggle through. Eh? I would be the guy that said, you know, after 6 months, I stopped getting sick. But I would fight through.
I can imagine vertigo as well. You know, when you remove that thing, and because everything is, you know, when you get off a trampoline.
Yeah.
That sensation you have when you walk around on solid ground again, after you jump for so long on that thing. I think you would have a bit of that, almost like a sense. It will just linger in the background, and that's enough to make you sick. And it messes with your middle ear, I'm pretty sure, as well. And then it throws off your balance, and that's also why you throw up.
Yes, absolutely. So
no, not for
apparently
me.
Some other things were like the weight of the device as well. The fact that most of its weight is actually in the front. So yeah, you're feeling very forwards heavy.
That's enough already to make me feel bad. No, man, this is not lekker.
So this is crazy. The Verge, if you don't know, is like a tech-friendly publication. Great content all the time. Parker or Talona, or Taloni, is the Verge's product manager, and he was apparently using this device, which led to I'm sure this sounds much more crazy than what it is, but a burst blood vessel in his eye. That would be a strong motivator for me. You're like, you know, I don't want to have one of my two eyes bloodshot, you know, for the first 3 months.
You get that when you sneeze with your eyes open.
or just using a Vision Pro, apparently.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
Apparently, at least one other person noted that they had similar experience with redness. To be fair, a VR headset uses, you can report like eye dryness and redness. Mm. But he went on to say that despite being as magical to use as I'd hoped, it was simply way too uncomfortable to wear, even for short periods of time, both due to the weight of the strap designs and also, you know, he wanted to use it but dreaded putting it on. Now, the crazy thing for me is you can see some people on TikTok and stuff who are like completely accustomed to this headset. So it is definitely not everybody is reporting these problems. Some guys are literally just living in the headset now. You know, they have a thing called pass-through, which is once you put the headset on, you can see you can see out of the headset basically in perfect clarity. But the difference is you can digitally recreate screens and things in your physical environment in augmented reality. So very, very cool tech. Very, very sad to see some people taking it back. And I think some of the reasons is just the casual VR adoption thing, you know, like people aren't, not everybody's built for VR, and not everyone's prepared to build themselves to be capable of using VR. I think anyone could use it, but I do think it requires a little push and pull. Mm. And VR is the type of thing that if you're playing it and 20 minutes goes by and you're feeling like a little bit like off your center, just stop playing and take a break.
Yeah.
Because what lies ahead is not fun.
No. So,
it's not fun.
Definitely not.
You're going to get a strongly worded email about from your body about why that's not
good. Definitely.
Some more notes. Tesla's update takes an aim at cold air weather woes. So you're looking at ways for Tesla to better use their batteries to fare well in extremely cold weather. Something that you don't actually think about. So Tesla rolled out two changes in its latest vehicle software update that appear to be aimed sparingly at battery issues that immobilize cars during an extremely cold weather event in January. One of those new features will call and tell Tesla drivers how much time they can expect until their battery is warm enough for DC fast charging, while the other will automatically defrost the charge port. Wow, so if your charge port gets frozen, good luck.
Fear not.
I mean, fair enough. I mean, if you have your petrol tank is frozen, you're not going to put petrol in it. So according to the update's release notes published by Not a Tesla app, the charge port will start warming automatically when drivers use the car's navigation feature to get to a charging station. Frozen charge ports could be one of the issues that left drivers stranded during an extremely cold snap in Chicago earlier this year. Imagine that, being locked in or out or away from being able to drive your car because your charging port is frozen. Yeah. But flippin' cool that a Tesla comes equipped with a charge port defroster.
Yeah.
Come on, that's pretty cool.
Imagine going to work and that's the reason why you're late.
Why are you late for work? My carport froze.
Yeah, and you know? I don't have the defrost function.
Can you just imagine 6 years ago coming into work? It's like, why are you late? It's like, no, my car charger froze. Like,
what, are you high?
Did you smoke on the way here? You know, it's crazy.
It's a problem in 2024. Can you believe this?
Can you believe it? And now we're going to a music break.
Yes, and then we come back with this week's final stretch.
The final stretch. Well, we were young, it seemed that life was so wonderful. A colorful miracle. Remember how everything was so beautiful. I miss the old days when the skies were blue. I miss the long nights.
Welcome back to Tech Plus. This is now the final stretch for this week's show. Kane, what have you got for us next?
Next, let's take a look at something that I think is quite flippin' cool. You know, if we consider, especially living in South Africa, if you're a guy that or a girl that, you know, is trying to game and, you know, trying to play PC games, but you're also maybe you're a student, or, you know, maybe you're studying, maybe you're doing part-time work, maybe you're doing part-time and full-time jobs, it can be incredibly expensive to afford some of the luxuries that are, you know, computer games and PC games and having that experience, where some games are coming in at 1,500, 2,000 Rand each. You know, 1,500 Rand a game, is three games is 4,500 Rand.
Mm-mm.
It's a lot of money, you know? It's a lot of crazy money that we as South Africans don't have the luxury of just being able to spend.
Yeah.
You know, willy-nilly.
Rather spend it on electricity
or solar backup panels, yeah, or yeah, inverters or food or, you know, any number of things. And then you get initiatives that make companies a lot of money but also provide a utility to consumers that just wouldn't exist today. And that's Microsoft's Xbox Game Pass. Xbox Game Pass, if you open up your Windows computer right now and you type in the Microsoft Store and you go into the Microsoft Store, you'll actually see that they're probably advertising an Xbox Game Pass subscription to you right now at 15 Rand, which means for 15 Rand discounted from 80 Rand, you can go onto Xbox Game Pass and you can play any one of the games on Xbox Game Pass. And there are at least 10 or 15 games valued at 1,500 Rand each. There's at least 20 to 50 games valued at probably 1,000 Rand each. There's probably between 30 and 80 games valued at like between 300 and 500 Rand each. What a saving opportunity. 17 Rand for a month. 17 Rand. And to make it even better, if you change that, you know, that's your first month, you're obviously getting a discount. It's going to renew at 80 Rand a month. Still cheaper than Netflix, okay?
Yeah.
Netflix, you could argue that if you rented out a couple movies, you can still, you know, you can still maybe break even at the same amount that Netflix costs. But Xbox Game Pass, what else can you compare to Xbox Game Pass? You can't get a game for 70 Rand. You can't even fit one game into 70 Rand. You might be able to rent one movie for 150 Rand if you're using the Netflix money. So for 100 Rand, if you add 20 Rand extra, okay, you can now play any Xbox game on Xbox or PC. So you have it on both. You can play Xbox games, you can play PC games. It costs you 100 Rand a month. There's a holy matrimony of games.
Mm-hmm.
There are just an infinite number of them. Really cool games. There's like Grounded and No Man's Sky and some really, really good games. Anyway, Microsoft's Xbox Game Pass service now has 34 million subscribers. That's up 36% from the 25 million Microsoft previously reported more than 2 years ago. 34 million subscribers paying Ubisoft, paying Xbox every single month $100 to play games. That's a lot of money per month. Xbox made a really good move there, and they actually built a system that enables people to efficiently and effectively get games. Before, what you would have to do is you would have to illegally pirate them. You would have to steal them, basically. You would have to download it from dodgy places, get it from people that have cracked it, and all sorts of other stuff, if you actually want to be able to play games without spending the money. So I think it's great that there's actually a way to legally play the right games. And all these games have multiplayer available and all that sort of stuff. And for a few bucks, you can basically hop on and play them. That's not even to mention cloud services. So if you want to play games on PC, you need a PC. If you want to play games on Xbox, you need an Xbox. But with cloud services, you can just use your smart TV, connect a PS5 controller or an Xbox controller, and you'll probably be able to play games through the cloud, just with hardware rendering in a different town away from you and using the internet to access that hardware instead of having to have that hardware locally available.
Yeah.
So not only can you pay 100 Rand and play most games, but at the same time, you can probably pay 250 Rand and have access to a computer worth 20, 30,000 Rand and basically just play any game
much
you
better
want to. For the price of basically a Netflix, two Netflix subscriptions a month,
yeah,
you can have access to a, you know, to a hardware
that would be equivalent to a 30,000 rand computer with tech.
So you're saying the days of buying the really expensive computers are over?
I think the days of people...
You don't need it in your house anymore, per se. I think
the days of people not being able to game because they don't make enough money are over.
Anybody can game now. You can just use a different machine. Would we call that a virtual machine?
You could connect like a laptop from 2015, as long as it can run, you know, as long as it can run NVIDIA's software or just can access a browser, you're most likely able to do cloud servicing.
Sure. And in terms of ping and all that stuff, is that not a problem? And any delays and jitter and stuff, is that not a problem?
I think that's where you're going to see the biggest impact. If you're a guy who games on a PC all the time, let's explain what kind of delays you have.
Mm.
Right, if you're playing your PC, the amount of times it takes most people to send a signal from their computer to their screen is about 5 to 7 milliseconds.
Mm.
Gamers are probably around 3 milliseconds, which means in, you know, 3/1000ths of a second, your information can go from your computer to a screen, and in the worst case scenario, 7/7000ths of a second, you know, can go to can get that information, can go from your computer to your screen. Your keyboard is probably anywhere from 3 to 5, maybe 6 milliseconds as well, and your internet connection can be anywhere from 20 to 50 milliseconds. So now all of that delay, that input delay, that visual delay, all of that kind of more or less is piggybacking on your internet connection. So in the past, where the worst you could have is 7 milliseconds from your computer to your screen, is now going to be anywhere from 15 to 30 milliseconds, which can be a relatively big jump. But I do assure you that you can't count 30 milliseconds. Like, I can't be like,
no,
count to 90 milliseconds as fast as you can. It's going to happen in a fraction of a second. So that's why I say, if you're not natively a gamer and you're not used to these things, or you don't even care about these things, or you don't even notice these things, and you're not the type of person to look out for these things, you're not even going to notice. You're going to have a great time.
Okay.
You're going to save a huge amount of money. And if you are a gamer, and I think if you went from here to Cape Town, you're staying at an Airbnb, you didn't bring your computer with you, you'd probably appreciate that technology. You'd probably be like, I'm glad I can still play my favorite game. I'm glad I can still, you know, I'm glad I didn't have to carry this 35 to 50 kg desktop computer and 2 screens that are 5 kgs each. And,
it's too much.
No, but if you have a laptop, obviously that's a different story. But if you have an entry-level laptop, you can use cloud servicing to basically play games as if you have the best laptop in the world, you know?
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense. I think it's going to be, there's going to be a future there for us. Internet's only getting faster. And I can expect to see more like this in the years to come. And then finally, the last piece of news, really good piece of news. SpaceX has successfully launched their Odysseus in bid to return US to the lunar surface. So the Nova C lander rode into space atop a Falcon 9 rocket and is now making its 2-week journey to the lunar South Pole. That is so exciting. I actually saw a guy on TikTok who was flying over the launch zone. So he actually saw the rocket launch from the ground and literally go into space while he's flying past. But can you imagine what an opportunity?
Right place, right time.
The other day when I was flying, you know, I was looking for the Eiffel Tower. I was like, imagine seeing the Eiffel Tower sending it to space. You're going to be like, whoa.
Yeah, I don't think you believe what you see then.
So it was originally scheduled to take place on Wednesday, but was delayed due to concerns regarding the temperature of the rocket's methane fuel. Shortly after liftoff, SpaceX confirmed that the IM-1 mission's Odysseus lander had been successfully deployed, and the first stage of the Falcon 9 rocket that delivered it into space had also landed back at Cape Canaveral. Odysseus is now making its way to the moon's South Pole, a region of particular scientific interest due to the occurrence of water ice, where it's expected to touch down on my birthday on February 22nd.
Oh!
What are the odds of that?
Is your birthday February 22nd?
It is.
Okay, hold on. I'm checking
the calendar.
Yeah, I'm just making a note here.
Okay. You're making a note quickly before you forget. You don't rely on Facebook anymore, do you?
No, I don't.
Really?
It's not reliable.
It's not.
It's caused a lot of trouble in the past.
It's because all your friends had to lie about their age to sign up on Facebook.
But even the dates... They don't show you the dates. I won't rely on it, because usually you would get a notification saying, you know, it's Kane's birthday today, he's 25 or whatever. But you don't always get those, so I didn't rely on it. I actually made my own list of people, you know, like notable birthdays.
Oh, so you have like a journal.
Now I have it in my actual diary, pen and paper.
Nice.
And I also put it on my birthday book, or birthday, what do you call this? Birthday notepad.
Nice. On my phone.
I know it's a bit nerdy, but that's the only way I can remember.
Yeah. Hey, it's one step busy. Up from how I'm doing it.
How are you doing it?
Not. Not. I'm failing miserably. I'm trying really hard and like dropping every spinning plate.
It's hard, but just don't forget your girlfriend's birthday, because I think that's going to be a bit of a problem, eh?
Oh, that'll be the end,
I think, yeah, or your wife's birthday or your husband or whatever, if you're listening, obviously you'll be in a lot of trouble.
It's fine. You can get their birthday. Just if you have a child, don't forget theirs, because that hits different.
But they'll remind you.
they'll remind you.
Because they're standing next to your bed before you've even woken up, and they want their gift.
Emailing you wish lists. You just keep getting take a lot items in your email.
Yeah, those wish lists. Listen, Kane, we actually have mail.
Okay.
Somebody, his name is Ed, saying, is there a possibility that you and Kane can cover the topic of AI in the home security or alarm system environment? I think it would make for very interesting listening given the state of crime in our country. So next week, we can definitely look at that. Hey?
I've definitely got some good topics earmarked for us that talk about, you know, different security systems, what different AI technology they use, what's better, what's worse, how it works, what it can do for you, why should you use it.
So Kane is on it, Ed. Next week he's gonna answer that for you, okay?
Absolutely.
Are you ready for that?
Game on.
Okay. And if you also, to our listeners, if you want to send us any topic suggestions, if there's something you want us to talk about, we talk about all the stuff. So maybe you just have comments on what we say. Hopefully not hate mail. Send us a WhatsApp on 061-253-0670. We'd like to encourage a bit of interactivity there with our listeners.
Of course.
It's not just the two of us talking. It feels like it. But we have an audience and we want to, you know, talk about the stuff they want to hear. Because it feels like the two of us are just having coffee. that's what makes good radio, I think. If you know, your guest feels like they're having coffee with you, but they're
actually on air. What's that number again?
It's 061-253-0670.
Nice.
That's the WhatsApp line. Send us a message if you have any comments. But as I said, no hate mail.
Only voice notes.
Yeah. You can send a voice note as well, then we'll play it on air. I think that will be nice.
Put a disclaimer if you don't want it to be played.
Yeah.
Don't put it at the end of the voice notes.
Yeah, imagine you're playing this voice note and then at the end the person says, listen, please don't play this, eh? Whoops.
Oh, whoops. Should listen first. And on that funny note,
it's time to say goodbye. Kane, until next week, same time, same place. And hope you're going to have a super weekend.
Thank you so much. And thank you to all of our listeners for listening. See you next week.
As always. Cheers, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.